same way guardians do, Lissa informed him. If you want to learn to fight, go to the academies. Form classes and start at the beginning, the same way the novices do. That way, you won't be taking guardians away from active protection. It's a safe environment, and the guardians there specialize in teaching students anyway. She paused thoughtfully. You could even start making defense part of the standard curriculum for Moroi students already there. Astonished stares fell on her, mine included. It was such an elegant solution, and everyone else around us realized it. It gave no party 100% of its demands, but it met most in a way that didn't really harm the other side. Pure genius. The other Moroi studied her with wonder and fascination. Suddenly, everyone started talking at once, excited about the idea. They drew Lissa in. And soon, there was a passionate conversation going on about her plan. I got shuffled to the edges and decided that was just fine. Then, I retreated altogether and sought out a corner near a door. Along the way, I passed a server with a tray of hors d'oeuvres. Still hungry, I eyed them suspiciously, but saw nothing that looked like the foie gras from the other day. I gestured to one that looked like some sort of braised rare meat. "Is that goose liver?" I asked. She shook her head. "Sweetbread." That didn't sound bad. I reached for it. "It's pancreas," said a voice behind me. I jerked back. "What?" I squeaked. The waitress took my shock for rejection and moved on. Adrian Ivashkov moved into my line of sight, looking immensely pleased with himself. "Are you messing with me?" I asked. "Sweetbread is pancreas?" I don't know why that shocked me so much. Moroi consumed blood. Why not internal organs? Still, I repressed a shudder. Adrian shrugged. "It's really good." I shook my head in disgust. "Oh, man, rich people suck." His amusement continued. "What are you doing here, little Dampier? Are you following me around?" "Of course not," I scoffed. He was dressed to perfection, as always. "Especially not after all the trouble you've gotten us into." He flashed one of his tantalizing smiles, and despite how much he annoyed me, I again felt that overwhelming urge to be near him. What was up with that?
"I don't know," he teased.
He'd looked perfectly sane now, exhibiting no trace of the weird behavior I'd witnessed in his room. And yeah, he looked a lot better in a tuxedo than any guy I'd seen in there so far.
"As many times as we keep seeing each other? This is, what, the fifth time? It's starting to look suspicious. Don't worry, though. I won't tell your boyfriend. Either of them."
I opened my mouth to protest, then remembered he'd seen me with Dimitri earlier. I refused to blush. I only have one boyfriend. Sort of. Maybe not anymore. And anyway, there's nothing to tell. I don't even like you.
"No?"
asked Adrian, still smiling. He leaned toward me, like he had a secret to share.
"Then why are you wearing my perfume?"
This time, I did blush. I took a step back. "I'm not." He laughed.
"Of course you are. I counted the boxes after you left. Besides, I can smell it on you. It's nice. Sharp. But still sweet. Just like I'm sure you are deep down inside. And you got it right, you know. Just enough to add an edge, but not enough to drown your own scent."
The way he said scent made it sound like a dirty word. Royal Moroi might make me uncomfortable, but smart-ass guys hitting on me didn't. I dealt with them on a regular basis. I shook off my shyness and remembered who I was. "Hey," I said, tossing my hair back. "I had every right to take one. You offered them. Your mistake is in assuming me taking one means anything. It doesn't, except that maybe you should be more careful with where you dump all that money of yours."
"Ooh, Rose Hathaway is here to play, folks," He paused and took a glass of what looked like champagne from a passing waiter.
You want one?
I don't drink.
Right.
Adrian handed me a glass anyway, then shooed the waiter away and took a drink of the champagne. I had a feeling it wasn't his first of the night.
So,
sounds like our Vasilisa put my dad in his place. I glanced back at the group I'd just left. Silverhair still stood there, gesticulating wildly.
That guy's your dad?
That's what my mom says.
You agree with him? About how Maroi fighting would be suicide?
Adrian shrugged and took another sip.
I don't really have an opinion on that.
That's not possible. How can you not feel one way or another?
Dunno. Just not something I think about. I've got better things to do.
Like stalk me, I suggested. And Lissa.
I still wanted to know why she'd been in his room. He smiled again.
I told you. You're the one following me.
Yeah, I know, 5 times. I stopped. 5 times?
He nodded.
No, it's only been 4.
With my free hand, I ticked them off. There was that first night, the night at the spa, then when I came to your room, and now tonight.
The smile turned secretive.
If you say so.
I do say so.
Again, my words trailed off. I had talked to Adrian 1 other time.
Sort of.
You can't mean...
Mean what?
A curious, eager expression lit his eyes. It was more hopeful than presumptuous. I swallowed, recalling the dream.
Nothing.
Without thinking about it, I took a drink of champagne. Across the room, Lissa's feelings burned back to me, calm and content. Good.
Why are you smiling?
Adrian asked.
Because Lissa's still over there, working that crowd.
No surprise there. She's one of those people who can charm anyone she wants if she tries hard enough. Even people who hate her.
I gave him a wry look.
I feel that way when I talk to you.
But you don't hate me,
he said, finishing the last of his champagne.
Not really.
I don't like you either.
So you keep saying.
He took a step toward me, not threatening, just making the space between us more intimate.
But I can live with that.
Rose!
The sharpness of my mother's voice cut through the air. A few people within earshot glanced over at us. My mother, all 5 angry feet of her, stormed up to us. Chapter 17.
What do you think you're doing?
She demanded. Her voice was still too loud as far as I was concerned.
Nothing, I...
Excuse us, Lord Ivashkov, she growled.
Then, like I was 5 years old, she grabbed me by my arm and jerked me out of the room. Champagne sloshed out of my glass and splashed onto the skirt of my dress.
What do you think you're doing? I exclaimed, once we were out in the hall.
Mournfully, I looked down at my dress.
This is silk. You could have ruined it.
She grabbed the champagne flute and set it down on a nearby table.
Good. Maybe it'll stop you from dressing up like a cheap whore.
Whoa, I said, shocked. That's kind of harsh. And where do you get off turning motherly all of a sudden?
I gestured to the dress.
This isn't exactly cheap. You thought it was nice of Tasha to give it to me.
That's because I didn't expect you to wear it out with Maroi and make a spectacle of yourself.
I'm not making a spectacle of myself. And anyway, it covers everything up.
A dress that tight might as well be showing everything, she retorted.
She, of course, was dressed in Guardian black, tailored black linen pants and a matching blazer. She had a few curves of her own, but the clothing hid them.
Especially when you're with a group like that. Your body's conspicuous, and flirting with Maroi doesn't really help.
I wasn't flirting with him. The accusation made me angry because I felt I'd been on really good behavior lately. I used to flirt all the time and do other things with Moroi guys, but after a few talks and one embarrassing incident with Dimitri, I'd realized how stupid that was. Dampier girls did have to be careful with Moroi guys, and I kept that in mind all the time now. Something petty occurred to me. "Besides," I said mockingly, "isn't that what I'm supposed to do? Hook up with a Moroi and further my race? It's what you did." She glowered. "Not when I was your age."
"You were only a few years older than me."
"Don't do anything stupid, Rose," she said. "You're too young for a baby. You don't have the life experience for it. You haven't even lived your own life yet. You won't be able to do the kind of job you wish you could."
I groaned, mortified. "Are we really discussing this? How did we go from me allegedly flirting to suddenly having a litter? I'm not having sex with him or anyone else. And even if I were, I know about birth control. Why are you talking to me like I'm a child?"
"Because you act like one."
It was remarkably like what Dimitri had told me. I glared. "So you're going to send me to my room now?"
"No, Rose."
She suddenly looked tired.
"You don't have to go to your room. But don't go back in there either. Hopefully you didn't draw too much attention."
"You make it sound like I was giving a lap dance in there," I told her. "I just had dinner with Lyssa."
"You'd be surprised what things can spark rumors," she warned, "especially with Adrian Ivashkov."
With that, she turned and headed off down the hall. Watching her, I felt anger and resentment burn through me. Overreact much? I hadn't done anything wrong. I knew she had her whole blood whore paranoia, but this was extreme, even for her. Worst of all, she'd dragged me out of there, and several people had witnessed it. For someone who supposedly didn't want me attracting attention, she'd kind of messed that one up. A couple of Moroi, who'd been standing near Adrian and me, walked out of the room. They glanced in my direction and then whispered something as they passed. "Thanks, Mom," I muttered to myself. Humiliated, I stalked off in the opposite direction, not really sure where I was going. I headed out toward the back of the lodge, away from all the activity. The hall eventually ended, but a door leading to some stairs sat on the left. The door was unlocked, so I followed the stairs upward to another door. To my pleasure, it opened up onto a small rooftop deck that didn't appear to see much use. A blanket of snow lay over it all, but it was early morning out here, and the sun shone brightly, making everything glitter. I brushed snow off a large box-like object that looked to be part of the ventilation system. Heedless of my dress, I sat down on it. Wrapping my arms around myself, I stared off, taking in the view and the sun I rarely got to enjoy. I was startled when the door opened a few minutes later. When I looked back, I was even more startled to see Dimitri emerge. My heart gave a small flutter, and I turned away, unsure what to think. His boots crunched in the snow as he walked over to where I was sitting. A moment later, he took off his long coat and draped it over my shoulders. He sat down beside me. "You must be freezing." I was, but I didn't want to admit it. "The sun's out." He tipped his head back, looking up at the perfect blue sky. I knew he missed the sun as much as I did sometimes.
"It is, but we're still on a mountain in the middle of winter."
I didn't answer. We sat there in a comfortable silence for a while. Occasionally, a light wind blew clouds of snow around. It was night for Moroi, and most would be going to bed soon, so the ski runs were quiet. "My life is a disaster," I finally said.
"It's not a disaster," he said automatically.
"Did you follow me from the party?"
"Yes."
"I didn't even know you were there." His dark clothes indicated he must have been on guardian duty at the party.
So you saw the illustrious Janine cause a commotion by dragging me out?
It wasn't a commotion. Hardly anyone noticed. I saw because I was watching you.
I refused to let myself get excited over that. That's not what she said, I told him. I might as well have been working a corner as far as she was concerned. I relayed the conversation from the hallway.
She's just worried about you,
Dimitri said when I was finished. She overreacted.
Sometimes mothers are overprotective.
I stared at him. Yeah, but this is my mother, and she didn't seem that protective, really. I'd think she was more worried I'd embarrass her or something. And all that becoming a mother too young stuff was stupid. I'm not going to do anything like that.
Maybe she wasn't talking about you,
he said. More silence. My jaw fell open. You don't have the life experience for it. You haven't even lived your own life yet. You won't be able to do the kind of job you wish you could. My mom had been 20 when I was born. Growing up, that had always seemed really old to me. But now, that was only a few years off for me. Not old at all. Did she think she'd had me too soon? Had she done a shoddy job raising me simply because she didn't know any better at the time? Did she regret the way things had turned out between us? And was it maybe possible that she'd had some personal experience of her own with Maroi men and people spreading rumors about her? I'd had inherited a lot of her features. I mean, I'd even noticed tonight what a nice figure she had. She had a pretty face, too. For a nearly 40-year-old, I mean. She'd probably been really, really good-looking when she was younger. I sighed. I didn't want to think about that. If I did, I might have to reevaluate my relationship with her. Maybe even acknowledge my mother was a real person. And I already had too many relationships stressing me. Lissa always worried me, even though she seemed to be okay for a change. My so-called romance with Mason was in shambles, and then, of course, there was Dimitri. We aren't fighting right now, I blurted out. He gave me a sidelong look.
Do you want to fight?
No. I hate fighting with you. Verbally, I mean. I don't mind in the gym. I thought I detected a hint of a smile. Always a half smile for me, rarely a full one.
I don't like fighting with you either.
Sitting next to him there, I marveled at the warm and happy emotions springing up inside of me. There was something about being around him that felt so good, that moved me in a way Mason couldn't. You can't force love, I realized. It's there, or it isn't. If it's not there, you've got to be able to admit it. If it is there, you've got to do whatever it takes to protect the ones you love. The next words that came out of my mouth astonished me, both because they were completely unselfish and because I actually meant them. You should take it. He flinched.
What?
Tasha's offer. You should take her up on it. It's a really great chance. I remembered my mom's words about being ready for children. I wasn't. Maybe she hadn't been. But Tasha was. And I knew Dimitri was, too. They got along really well. He could go be her guardian, have some kids with her. It would be a good deal for both of them.
I never expected to hear you say anything like that, he told me, voice tight. Especially after...
What a bitch I've been? Yeah. I tugged his coat tighter against the cold. It smelled like him. It was intoxicating, and I could half imagine being wrapped in his embrace. Adrian might have been onto something about the power of scent. Well, like I said, I don't want to fight anymore. I don't want us to hate each other, and, well, I squeezed my eyes shut and then opened them. No matter how I feel about us, I want you to be happy. Silence yet again. I noticed then that my chest hurt. Dimitri reached out and put his arm around me. He pulled me to him, and I rested my head on his chest.
Rosa.
was all he said. It was the first time he'd really touched me since the night of the lust charm. The practice room had been something different, more animal. This wasn't even about sex. It was just about being close to someone you cared about, about the emotion that kind of connection flooded you with. Dimitri might run off with Tasha, but I would still love him. I would probably always love him. I cared about Mason, but I would probably never love him. I sighed into Dimitri, just wishing I could stay like that forever. It felt right being with him. And, no matter how much the thought of him and Tasha made me ache, doing what was best for him felt right. Now I knew it was time to stop being a coward and do something else that was right. Mason had said I needed to learn something about myself. I just had. Reluctantly, I pulled away and handed Dimitri his coat. I stood up. He regarded me curiously, sensing my unease. "Where are you going?" he asked. "To break someone's heart," I replied. I admired Dimitri for a heartbeat more, the dark, knowing eyes and silken hair. Then I headed inside. I had to apologize to Mason and tell him there'd never be anything between us. Chapter 18. The high heels were starting to hurt me, so I took them off when I went back inside, walking barefoot through the lodge. I hadn't been to Mason's room, but I remembered him mentioning the number once and found it without difficulty. Shane, Mason's roommate, opened the door a few moments after I knocked.
"Hey, Rose."
He stepped aside for me, and I walked in, peering around. Some infomercial was playing on the TV. One downside of nocturnal life was a shortage of good programming, and empty soda cans covered nearly every flat surface. There was no sign of Mason anywhere.
"Where is he?"
I asked. Shane stifled a yawn.
"I thought he was with you."
"I haven't seen him all day." He yawned again, then frowned in thought.
"He was throwing some stuff in a bag earlier. I figured you guys were running off for some crazy romantic getaway, picnic or something. Hey, nice dress."
"Thanks," I murmured, feeling a frown of my own coming on. Packing a bag? That didn't make any sense. There was nowhere to go. There was no way to go either. This resort was as tightly guarded as the academy. Lissa and I had only managed to break out of that place with compulsion, and it had still been a pain in the ass. Yet, why on earth would Mason pack a bag if he wasn't leaving? I asked Shane a few more questions and decided to follow up on the possibility, crazy as it seemed. I found the guardian in charge of security and scheduling. He gave me the names of those guardians who'd been on duty around the resort's borders when Mason had last been seen. Most of the names I knew, and most were off duty now, making them easy to find. Unfortunately, the first couple hadn't seen Mason around today. When they asked why I wanted to know, I gave vague answers and hurried off. The third person on my list was a guy named Alan, a guardian who usually worked the academy's lower campus. He was just coming in after skiing, taking his equipment off near the door. Recognizing me, he smiled as I approached.
"Sure, I saw him,"
he said, bending down to his boots. Relief flooded over me. Until then, I hadn't realized how worried I'd been. "Do you know where he is?"
"Nope. Let him and Eddie Castile and, whatever her name, the Rinaldi girl, out through the north gate and didn't see them after that."
I stared. Alan continued unhooking his skis as though we were discussing slope conditions. "You let Mason and Eddie and Maya out?"
"Yep."
Why?" He finished and looked back up at me, a kind of happy and bemused look on his face.
"Because they asked me."
An icy feeling started creeping through me. I found out which guardian had watched the north gate with Alan and immediately sought him out. That guardian gave me the same response. He'd let Mason, Eddie, and Maya out, no questions asked. And, like Alan, he didn't seem to think there was anything wrong with that. He appeared almost dazed. It was a look I'd seen before, a look that came over people when Lissa used compulsion. In particular, I'd seen it happen when Lissa didn't want people to remember something very well. She could bury the memory in them, either erasing it altogether or planting it for later. She was so good at compulsion, though, that she could just make people forget completely. For them to still have some memories meant someone who wasn't as good at compulsion had worked on them. Someone, say, like Maya. I wasn't the fainting type, but for just a moment, I felt like I could keel over. The world spun, and I closed my eyes and took a deep breath. When I could see again, my surroundings stayed stable. Okay, no problem. I would reason this out. Mason, Eddie, and Maya had left the resort earlier today. Not only that, they had done it by using compulsion, which was utterly forbidden. They hadn't told anyone. They'd left through the North Gate. I'd seen a map of the resort. The North Gate guarded a driveway that connected to the only semi-major road in the area, a small highway that led to a little town about 12 miles away. The town Mason had mentioned that had buses. To Spokane. Spokane, where this traveling pack of Strigoi and their humans might be living. Spokane, where Mason could fulfill all his crazy dreams about slaying Strigoi. Spokane, which he only knew about because of me. No, 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 I murmured to myself, almost running toward my room. There, I stripped off the dress and changed into heavy winter clothes, boots, jeans, and a sweater. Grabbing my coat and gloves, I hurried back toward the door and then paused. I was acting without thinking. What was I actually going to do? I needed to tell someone, obviously, but that would get the trio in a lot of trouble. It would also tip off Dimitri that I'd gone and gossiped about the Spokane Strigoi information he'd told me in confidence, as a sign of respecting my maturity. I studied the time. It would take a while for anyone around the resort to know we were missing, if I could actually get out of the resort. A few minutes later, I found myself knocking on Christian's door. He answered, looking sleepy and cynical as usual.
If you've come to apologize for her, he told me loftily, you can just go ahead and...
Oh, shut up, I snapped. This isn't about you. Hastily, I relayed the details of what was going on. Even Christian didn't have a witty response for that one.
So, Mason, Eddie, and Maya went to Spokane to hunt Strigoi?
Yes.
Holy shit, why didn't you go with them? Seems like something you'd do.
I resisted the urge to smack him.
Because I'm not insane, but I'm going to go get them before they do something even stupider.
That was when Christian caught on.
And what do you need from me?
I need to get off the resort's property. They got Maya to use compulsion on the guards. I need you to do the same thing. I know you've practiced it.
I have, he agreed. But, well...
For the first time ever, he looked embarrassed.
I'm not very good at it. And doing it on damn piers is nearly impossible. Lys is 100 times better than me, or probably any Maroi.
I know, but I don't want to get her into trouble.
He snorted. But you don't mind if I do?
I shrugged. Not really.
You're a piece of work, you know that?
Yeah, I do, actually. So, 5 minutes later, he and I found ourselves trekking out to the North Gate. The sun was coming up, so most everyone was inside. This was a good thing, and I hoped it'd make our escape that much easier. Stupid, stupid, I kept thinking. This was going to blow up in our faces. Why had Mason done this? I knew he'd had this whole crazy vigilante attitude, and he'd certainly seemed upset that the Guardians hadn't done anything about the recent attack. But still, was he really that unhinged? He had to know how dangerous this was. Was it possible? Was it possible I'd upset him so much with the making out disaster that he'd gone off the deep end? Enough to go and do this and get Maya and Eddie to join him? Not that those two would be hard to convince. Eddie would follow Mason anywhere. And Maya was almost as gung-ho as Mason to kill every Strigoi in the world. Yet, out of all the questions I had about this, one thing was definitely clear. I'd told Mason about the Strigoi in Spokane. Hands down, this was my fault. And without me, none of this would have happened. Lissa always makes eye contact, I coached Christian as we approached the exit, and speaks in a really, like, calm voice. I don't know what else. I mean, she concentrates a lot, too, so try that. Focus on forcing your will on them.
I know, he snapped. I've seen her do it.
Fine, I snapped back. Just trying to help. Squinting, I saw that only one Guardian stood at the gate, a total stroke of luck. They were in between shifts. With the sun out, the risk of Strigoi had disappeared. The Guardians would still continue in their duties, but they could relax just a bit. The guy on duty didn't seem particularly alarmed by our appearance.
What are you kids doing out here?
Christian swallowed. I could see the lines of tension on his face.
You're going to let us out of the gate, he said.
A note of nervousness made his voice tremble, but otherwise, he did a fair approximation of Lissa's soothing tones. Unfortunately, it had no effect on the Guardian. As Christian had pointed out, using compulsion on a Guardian was nearly impossible. Maya had gotten lucky. The Guardian grinned at us.
What?
He asked, clearly amused. Christian tried again. You're going to let us out. The guy's smile faltered just a little, and I saw him blink in surprise. His eyes didn't glaze over in the same way Lissa's victims did, but Christian had done enough to briefly enthrall him. Unfortunately, I could tell right then and there that it wouldn't be enough to make him let us out and forget. Fortunately, I'd been trained to compel people without the use of magic. Sitting near his post was an enormous maglite, 2 feet long and easily 7 pounds. I grabbed the maglite and clocked him on the back of the head. He grunted and crumpled to the ground. He'd barely seen me coming, and despite the horribleness of what I'd just done, I kind of wished one of my instructors had been there to grade me on such an awesome performance.
Jesus Christ! Exclaimed Christian. You just assaulted a Guardian!
Yeah, so much for getting the guys back without getting anyone in trouble. I didn't know just how much you sucked at compulsion. I'll deal with the fallout later. Thanks for your help. You should head back before the next shift comes on. He shook his head and grimaced.
No, I'm going with you on this.
No, I argued. I only needed you to get through the gate. You don't have to get in trouble over this.
I'm already in trouble.
He pointed at the Guardian. He saw my face. I'm screwed either way, so I might as well help you save the day. Stop being a bitch for a change. We hurried off, and I cast one last guilty glance at the Guardian. I was pretty sure I hadn't hit him hard enough to cause real damage, and with the sun coming out, he wouldn't freeze or anything. After about 5 minutes of walking down the highway, I knew we had a problem. Despite being covered and wearing sunglasses, the sun was taking its toll on Christian. It was slowing us down, and it wouldn't take that long for someone to find the Guardian I'd taken out and come after us. A car, not one of the Academy's, appeared behind us, and I made a decision. I didn't approve of hitchhiking in the least. Even someone like me knew how dangerous it was. But we needed to get to town fast. And I prayed Christian and I could take down any creepy stalker guy who tried to mess with us. Fortunately, When the car pulled over, it was just a middle-aged couple who looked more concerned than anything else.
You kids okay?
I jerked my thumb behind me. Our car slid off the road. Can you take us to town so I can call my dad? It worked. 15 minutes later, they dropped us off at a gas station. I actually had trouble getting rid of them because they wanted to help us so much. Finally, we convinced them we'd be fine, and we walked the few blocks over to the bus station. As I'd suspected, this town wasn't much of a hub for real travel. 3 lines serviced the town, 2 that went to other ski resorts, and 1 that went to Lowestown, Idaho. From Lowestown, you could go on to other places. I'd half hoped that we might beat Mason and the others before their bus came. Then we could have hauled them back without any trouble. Unfortunately, there was no sign of them. The cheery woman at the counter knew exactly who we were talking about, too. She confirmed that all 3 of them had bought tickets to Spokane by way of Lowestown.
"Damn it," I said.
The woman raised her eyebrows at my language. I turned to Christian. "You got money for the bus?" Christian and I didn't talk much along the way, except for me to tell him he'd been an idiot about Lissa and Adrian. By the time we reached Lowestown, I finally had him convinced, which was a minor miracle. He slept the rest of the way to Spokane, but I couldn't. I just kept thinking over and over that this was my fault. It was late in the afternoon by the time we reached Spokane. It took a few people, but we finally found someone who knew the shopping center Dimitri had mentioned. It was a long ways from the bus station, but it was walkable. My legs were stiff after almost 5 hours of riding a bus, and I wanted the movement. The sun was a while from setting, but it was lower and less detrimental to vampires, so Christian didn't mind the walk either. And, as often happened, when I was in calm settings, I felt a tug into Lissa's head. I let myself fall into her because I wanted to know what was happening back at the resort.
"I know you want to protect them, but we need to know where they are."
Lissa sat on the bed in our room while Dimitri and my mom stared her down. It was Dimitri who had spoken. Seeing him through her eyes was interesting. She had a fond respect for him, very different from the intense roller coaster of emotions I always experienced.
"I told you," said Lissa. "I don't know. I don't know what happened."
Frustration and fear for us burned through her. It saddened me to see her so anxious, but at the same time, I was glad I hadn't gotten her involved. She couldn't report what she didn't know.
"I can't believe they wouldn't have told you where they were going," said my mother.
Her words sounded flat, but there were lines of worry on her face.
"Especially with your bond."
"It only works one way," said Lissa sadly. "You know that." Dimitri knelt down so he could be at Lissa's height and look her in the eye. He pretty much had to do that to look anyone in the eye.
"Are you sure there's nothing? Nothing at all you can tell us? They're nowhere in town. The man at the bus station didn't see them, though we're pretty sure that's where they must have gone. We need something, anything to go on."
Man at the bus station. That was another stroke of luck. The woman who'd sold us the tickets must have gone home. Her replacement wouldn't know us. Lissa gritted her teeth and glared.
"Don't you think if I knew, I'd tell you? You don't think I'm worried about them, too? I have no idea where they are, none. And why'd they even leave? It doesn't make any sense either, especially why they'd go with Maya, of all people."
A twinge of hurt flickered through the bond, hurt at being left out of whatever we were doing, no matter how wrong. Dimitri sighed and leaned back on his heels. From the look on his face, he obviously believed her. It was also obvious that he was worried. Worried in more than a professional way. And seeing that concern for me, ate up my heart.
"Rose?"
Christian's voice brought me back to myself.
"We're here, I think."
The plaza consisted of a wide, open area in front of a shopping center. A cafe was carved into a corner of the main building, its tables spilling out into the open area. A crowd moved in and out of the complex, busy even at this time of the day.
"So how do we find them?"
asked Christian. I shrugged.
"Maybe if we act like Strigoi, they'll try to stake us."
A small, reluctant smile played over his face. He didn't want to admit it, but he thought my joke was funny. He and I went inside. Like any mall, it was filled with familiar chains, and a selfish part of me thought that maybe if we found the group soon enough, we could still get in some shopping time. Christian and I walked the length of it twice and saw no signs of our friends or anything resembling tunnels. "Maybe we're in the wrong place," I finally said.
"Or maybe they are," suggested Christian. "They could have gone to some other..."
"Wait." He pointed, and I followed the gesture. The three renegades sat at a table in the middle of the food court, looking dejected. They looked so miserable, I almost felt sorry for them.
"I'd kill for a camera right now," said Christian, smirking.
"This isn't funny," I told him, striding toward the group. Inside, I breathed a sigh of relief. The group clearly hadn't found any Strigoi. We're all still alive, and could maybe be taken back before we got into even more trouble. They didn't notice me until I was almost right next to them. Eddie's head jerked up.
"Rose, what are you doing here?"
"Are you out of your mind?" I yelled. A few people nearby gave us surprised looks. "Do you know how much trouble you're in? How much trouble you've gotten us in?"
"How the hell did you find us?"
asked Mason in a low voice, glancing anxiously around.
"You guys aren't exactly criminal masterminds," I told them.
"Your informant at the bus station gave you away. That, and I figured out that you'd want to go off on your pointless Strigoi hunting quest." The look Mason gave me revealed he still wasn't entirely happy with me. It was Maya who replied, however.
"It isn't pointless."
"Oh?" I demanded. "Did you kill any Strigoi? Did you even find any?"
"No,"
admitted Eddie.
"Good,"
I said. "You got lucky."
"Why are you so against killing Strigoi?" asked Maya hotly. "Isn't that what you train for?"
"I train for sane missions, not childish stunts like this."
"It isn't childish," she cried. "They killed my mother, and the guardians weren't doing anything. Even their information is bad. There weren't any Strigoi in the tunnels, probably none in the whole city."
Christian looked impressed.
"You found the tunnels?"
"Yeah," said Eddie. "But like she said, they were useless."
"We should see them before we go,"
Christian told me.
"It'd be kind of cool. And if the data was bad, there's no danger."
"No," I snapped. "We're going home now." Mason looked tired.
"We're going to search the city again. Even you can't make us go back, Rose."
"No, but the school's guardians can when I call and tell them you're here." Call it blackmailing or being a tattletale, the effect was the same. The three of them looked at me like I had just simultaneously gut-punched them all.
"You'd really do that?" asked Mason. "You'd sell us out like that?"
I rubbed my eyes, wondering desperately why I was trying to be the voice of reason here. Where was the girl who'd run away from school? Mason had been right. I had changed. "This isn't about selling anyone out. This is about keeping you guys alive."
"You think we're that defenseless?" asked Maya. "You think we'd get killed right away?"
"Yes," I said. "Unless you found some way to use water as a weapon." She flushed and didn't say anything.
"We brought silver stakes," said Eddie.
"Fantastic. They must have stolen them." I looked at Mason pleadingly. "Mason, please, call this off. Let's go back." He looked at me for a long time. Finally, he sighed.
"Okay."
Eddie and Maya looked aghast, but Mason had assumed a leadership role with them, and they didn't have the initiative to go on without him. Maya seemed to take it the hardest, and I felt bad for her. She'd barely had any real time to grieve for her mother. She just jumped right on board with this revenge thing as a way to cope with the pain. She'd have a lot to deal with when we got back. Christian was still excited about the idea of underground tunnels. Considering he spent all his time in an attic, I shouldn't have been all that surprised.
"I saw the schedule," he told me. "We've got a while before the next bus."
"We can't go walking into some Strigoi lair," I argued, walking toward the mall's entrance.
"There are no Strigoi there," said Mason. "It's seriously all janitorial stuff. There was no sign of anything weird. I really do think the Guardians had bad information."
"Rose," said Christian, "let's get something fun out of this." They all looked at me. I felt like a mom who wouldn't buy her kids candy at the grocery store.
"Okay, fine. Just a peek, though."
The others led Christian and me to the opposite end of the mall through a door marked Staff Only. We dodged a couple of janitors, then slipped through another door that led us to a set of stairs going down. I had a brief moment of déjà vu, recalling the steps down to Adrian's spa party. Only these stairs were dirtier and smelled pretty nasty. We reached the bottom. It wasn't so much a tunnel as a narrow corridor, lined in grime-caked cement. Ugly fluorescent lights were embedded sporadically along the walls. The passage went off to our left and right. Boxes of ordinary cleaning and electrical supplies sat around.
"See?" said Mason. "Boring."
I pointed in each direction.
"What's down there?"
"Nothing," sighed Maya. "We'll show you."
We walked down to the right and found more of the same. I was starting to agree with the boring assessment when we passed some black writing on one of the walls. I stopped and looked at it. It was a list of letters. D, B, C, O, T, D, V, L, D, Z, S, I. Some had lines and X marks next to them, but for the most part, the message was incoherent. Maya noticed my scrutiny.
"It's probably a janitor thing," she said, "or maybe some gang did it."
"Probably," I said, still studying it. The others shifted restlessly, not understanding my fascination with the jumble of letters. I didn't understand my fascination either, but something in my head tugged at me to stay. Then I got it. B, for Badika. Z, for Zeklos. I, for Ivashkov. I stared. The first letter of every royal family's name was there. There were three D names, but based on the order, you could actually read the list as a size ranking. It started with the smaller families, Dragomir, Badika, Kanta, and went all the way up to the giant Ivashkov clan. I didn't understand the dashes and lines beside the letters, but I quickly noticed which names had an X beside them, Badika and Drozdov. I stepped back from the wall. "We have to get out of here," I said. My own voice scared me a little. "Right now." The others looked at me in surprise.
"Why?" asked Eddie. "What's going on?"
"I'll tell you later. We just need to go." Mason pointed in the direction we'd been heading.
"This lets out a few blocks away. It's closer to the station."
I peered down into the dark unknown.
"No," I said. "We're going back the way we came."
They all looked at me like I was insane as we retraced our steps. But nobody questioned me yet. When we emerged from the mall's front, I breathed a sigh of relief to see that the sun was still out, though it was steadily sinking into the horizon and casting orange and red light onto the buildings. The remaining light would still be enough for us to get back to the bus station before we were really in any danger of seeing Strigoi. And I knew now that there really were Strigoi in Spokane. Dimitri's information had been correct. I didn't know what the list meant, but it clearly had something to do with the attacks. I needed to report it to the other Guardians immediately, and I certainly couldn't tell the others what I'd realized until we were safely at the lodge. Mason was likely to go back into the tunnels if he knew what I did. Most of our walk back to the station proceeded in silence. I think my mood had cowed the others. Even Christian seemed to have run out of snide comments. Inside, my emotions swirled, oscillating between anger and guilt as I kept re-examining my role in everything. Ahead of me, Eddie stopped walking, and I nearly ran into him. He looked around.
"Where are we?"
Snapping out of my own thoughts, I surveyed the area too. I didn't remember these buildings.
"Damn it!"
I exclaimed. "Are we lost? Didn't anyone keep track of which way we went?" It was an unfair question, since I clearly hadn't paid attention either, but my temper had pushed me past reason. Mason studied me for a few moments, then pointed.
"This way."
We turned and walked down a narrow street between two buildings. I didn't think we were going the right way, but I didn't really have a better idea. I also didn't want to stand around debating. We hadn't gone very far when I heard the sound of an engine and squealing tires. Maya was walking in the middle of the road, and protective conditioning kicked in before I even saw what was coming. Grabbing her, I jerked her out of the street and up against one of the building walls. The boys had done the same. A large gray van with tinted windows had rounded the corner and was headed in our direction. We pressed flat against the wall, waiting for it to go past. Only it didn't. Screeching to a halt, it stopped right in front of us, and the doors slid open. Three big guys spilled out, and again, my instincts kicked in. I had no clue who they were or what they wanted, but they clearly weren't friendly. That was all I needed to know. One of them moved toward Christian, and I struck out and punched him. The guy barely staggered, but was clearly surprised to have felt it at all, I think. He probably hadn't expected someone as small as me to be much of a threat. Ignoring Christian, he moved toward me. In my peripheral vision, I saw Mason and Eddie squaring off with the other two. Mason had actually pulled out his stolen silver stake. Maya and Christian stood there, frozen. Our attackers were relying a lot on bulk. They didn't have the sort of background we had in offensive and defensive techniques. Plus, they were human, and we had Dampier strength. Unfortunately, we also had the disadvantage of being cornered against the wall. We had nowhere to retreat to. Most importantly, we had something to lose. Like Maya. The guy who'd been sparring with Mason seemed to realize this. He backed off from Mason and instead grabbed her. I barely saw the flash of his gun before its barrel was pressed against her neck. Backing off from my own adversary, I yelled at Eddie to stop. We'd all been trained to respond instantly to those kinds of orders, and he halted his attack, glancing at me questioningly. When he saw Maya, his face went pale. I wanted nothing more than to keep pummeling these men, whoever they were, but I couldn't risk this guy hurting Maya. He knew it, too. He didn't even have to make the threat. He was human, but he knew enough about us to know that we'd go out of our way to protect the Maroi. Novices had a saying grilled into us from an early age. Only they matter. Everyone stopped and looked between him and me. Apparently, we were the acknowledged leaders here.
"What do you want?"
I asked harshly. The guy pressed his gun closer to Maya's neck, and she whimpered. For all her talk about fighting, she was smaller than me, and not nearly as strong, and she was too terrified to move. The man inclined his head toward the van's open door.
"I want you to get inside, and don't start anything. You do, and she's gone."
I looked at Maya, the van, my other friends, and then back to the guy. Shit.
Chapter 19. I hate being powerless, and I hate going down without a fight. What had taken place outside in the alley hadn't been a real fight. If it had, if I'd been beaten into submission, well, yeah, maybe I could accept that. Maybe. But I hadn't been beaten. I'd barely gotten my hands dirty. Instead, I'd gone quietly. Once they had us sitting on the floor of the van, they'd bound each of our hands behind our back with flex cuffs, strips of plastic that cinched together and held just as well as anything made of metal. After that, we rode in near silence. The men occasionally murmured something to each other, speaking too softly for any of us to hear. Christian or Maya might have been able to understand the words, but they were in no position to communicate anything to the rest of us. Maya looked as terrified as she had out on the street, and while Christian's fear had rapidly given way to his typical haughty anger, even he didn't dare act out with guards nearby. I was glad for Christian's self-control. I didn't doubt any of these men would smack him if he got out of line, and neither I nor the other novices were in a position to stop them. That was what really drove me crazy. The instinct to protect Maroy was so deeply ingrained in me that I couldn't even pause to worry about myself. Christian and Maya were the focus. They were the ones I had to get out of this mess. And how had this mess started? Who were these guys? That was the mystery. They were human, but I didn't believe for an instant that a group of Dampiers and Maroy had been random kidnapping victims. We'd been targeted for a reason. Our captors made no attempts to blindfold us or conceal our route, which I didn't take as a good sign. Did they think we didn't know the city well enough to retrace our steps? Or did they figure it didn't matter, since we wouldn't be leaving wherever they were taking us? All I sensed was that we were driving away from downtown, off toward a more suburban area. Spokane was as dull as I'd imagined. Unlike where pristine white snow lay in drifts, slushy gray puddles lined the streets and dirty patches dotted the lawns. There were also a lot fewer evergreen trees than I was used to. The scraggly, leafless, deciduous trees here seemed skeletal by comparison. They only added to the mood of impending doom. After what felt like less than an hour, the van turned down a quiet cul-de-sac, and we drove up to a very ordinary, yet large house. Other houses, identical in the way suburban homes often are, stood nearby, which gave me hope. Maybe we could get some help from the neighbors. We pulled inside the garage, and once the door was back down, the men ushered us into the house. It looked a lot more interesting on the inside. Antique, claw-footed sofas and chairs, a large saltwater fish tank, swords crossed over the fireplace, one of those stupid modern art paintings that consisted of a few lines splayed across the canvas. The part of me that enjoyed destroying things would have liked to study the swords in detail, but the main floor wasn't our destination. Instead, we were led down a narrow flight of stairs, down to a basement as large as the floor above. Only, unlike the main floor's open space, the basement was sectioned off into a series of halls and closed doors. It was like a rat's maze. Our captors led us through it without hesitation, into a small room with a concrete floor and unpainted drywall. The furniture inside consisted of several very uncomfortable-looking wooden chairs with slatted backs. Backs that proved to be a convenient place for rebinding our hands. The men seated us in such a way that Maya and Christian sat on one side of the room, and the rest of us Dampiers sat on the other. One guy, the leader apparently, watched carefully as one of his henchmen bound Eddie's hands with new flex cuffs.
"These are the ones you especially have to watch," he warned, nodding toward us. "They'll fight back."
His eyes traveled first to Eddie's face, then Mason's, and then mine. The guy and I held each other's gaze for several moments, and I scowled. He looked back over at his associate.
"Watch her, in particular."
When we'd been restrained to his satisfaction, he barked out a few more orders to the others and then left the room, shutting the door loudly behind him. His steps echoed.